Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, a conversation with Baltimore State's attorney Marilyn Mosby. None of the six officers she indicted in connection with the death of Freddie Gray were found guilty of a crime. Was it because the cases against them were weak, or because the system is, in Mosby's words, blatantly fraught with systemic and inherent complications? Last month, Ms. Mosby proposed a sweeping slate of reforms that would dramatically change the way police officers who are accused of misconduct are investigated and prosecuted. These reforms include recasting the teams who investigate allegations, expanding investigative powers of certain personnel, and placing limits on the opportunity for police officers to elect to have a bench trial instead of a jury trial. After we hear from the state's attorney, we'll have analysis of these reform proposals with our legal eagles, Dave Jaros and Eddie Smith. First, the news. And welcome to Midday, everybody, on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you're with us. Last month, Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby announced sweeping proposals to reform the way police officers who are accused of misconduct are investigated and prosecuted. On Monday, April 27, 2015, violence coursed through the streets of Baltimore. By Friday of that week, Ms. Mosby had filed charges against six of the officers involved in Freddie Gray's arrest. Given the frustration in places like Ferguson, Missouri, where charges were not brought against the officer who killed Michael Brown, Mosby's announcement was widely credited for bringing an end to the unrest here in Baltimore. But the trials that followed ended without any convictions. In July of this year, after William Porter's trial had ended in a hung jury and three other officers were acquitted by Judge Barry Williams in bench trials, Ms. Mosby held a press conference at the Gilmore Homes, where Freddie Gray was arrested, to announce that she would be dropping the charges against Porter, Garrett Miller, and Alicia White. Some critics suggested that Ms. Mosby had overcharged the officers who were brought to trial. Police were angry that the officers were charged at all. But Ms. Mosby has pointed to what she identifies as systemic problems with the way law enforcement officials are investigated and prosecuted, and her reform proposals are designed to address those very problems. State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby joins me in the studio. Madam State's Attorney, good to see you.
You as well, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. So let's go through all of these five proposals, and then we'll talk about them a bit. The first one involves the makeup of the people doing the investigating of police when misconduct allegations are leveled. So right now there's something called the Special Investigation Response Team, and you want to change that up a little bit. How?
I do. And I have to say, last month I was joined by the Association for Prosecuting Attorneys, who has endorsed these five-point plans. And I went around and kind of surveyed prosecutors all across the country to see what they were doing and how we can do things differently. So the first is really a collaborative investigative team. And what I found, the hard way, and if we look at, you know, the U.S. Department of Justice President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing, which was actually, it was put out in May of 2015, police in that report basically say that police should not police themselves. And so this is not an attack on police officers, but what other profession do you have where you're investigating your own? And so essentially understanding that the collection of evidence at the earliest stages of the investigation is extremely important. It's very, very important for us to have some sort of, to eliminate that inherent bias that people would automatically have in investigating their own. And especially when it comes to police misconduct cases, we also want to eliminate any sort of public skepticism. So the proposal is to essentially have an investigator from my office, an investigator from the state police, an investigator from the Baltimore Police Department, and an investigator with the Civilian Review Board. Again, you want that community accountability to investigate and to respond to these sorts of incidents.
So now you're relying on information that's gathered in an investigation only done by police. What you're suggesting is that this investigation be broadened to include people
Correct.
From the Maryland State Police, the Civilian Review Board. You also suggest that people from your office, people from the state's attorney's office who are investigating, should be granted police powers. What does that mean? What powers do they not currently have? Okay. What powers are you suggesting that they be afforded?
What I will say, even before we get into the police powers, but that collaborative investigative team, when we look across the country, there are other states that do it this way. So if you look in San Francisco, California, you look in Denver, Colorado, this is how they have it. They have this independent investigatory team. But what I addressed earlier is that it's very important to get as much information at those early stages of an investigation. The problems that I was presented with in this case and several other cases is the fact that my investigators who work for my office, who are oftentimes retired police officers, they do not have police powers. So essentially, they don't have the ability of issuing arrest warrants or executing arrest warrants. They don't have the power to make arrests. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, at the end of the day, when we were investigating this case in particular, we had to go to the sheriff's department because we didn't have the ability or the power to arrest. When we look at other counties, even within, and not just across the country, but even within the state of Maryland, when I'm talking about Garrett County, Dorchester County, Talbot County, other jurisdictions have imposed police powers, understanding that this is necessary for an independent investigatory sort of approach.
So arrest powers. I mean, who would you have arrested in this instance? I mean, you're talking about arresting the officers that you eventually charge?
Correct.
And the fact that you couldn't arrest them, but the sheriffs could, I mean, how did that matter? They got arrested one way or the other.
Well, it matters in that we can't necessarily My investigators don't have the ability of issuing a statement of probable cause and swearing by affidavit and essentially saying that these are the individuals, you know, that did it, and having the ability to say they have the power to arrest them. We had to actually utilize the sheriff's department in this case because we don't have that power, and that's what we're seeking to do.
Okay, again, let's continue going through all of the proposals, and we'll come back chat about each one. The next one includes cross-designating federal prosecutors so that they can operate under state law. So right now, federal prosecutors and state prosecutors are dealing with a different set of statutes. Is that right?
Well, the jurisdiction is completely different. So essentially, and we always hear these proposals about there is a need for a special prosecutor. I'm of the opinion that I don't believe that a special prosecutor is needed when we have these police misconduct cases. I believe in local accountability. Why do I say that? I say that because at the end of the day, if you have a special prosecutor that is appointed, that individual is accountable to the politics or the individual that appointed them. The person who put me in office and the people who put me in office, I'm accountable to the electorate. And so if I don't do my job, they have the ability of voting me out of my job. And so I don't believe in a special prosecutor. However, I do believe in a second level of transparency. And what does that mean? When it comes to these police misconduct cases, I'm essentially proposing that we create an MOU, a memorandum of understanding between local prosecutors and the federal, the Department of Justice. And essentially, they would review, and I'm so, you know, confident in my ability and in my investigation to review these cases and make a determination that when I elect to say that we're going to go with a no charge decision, the federal prosecutors, and this is something that we already do right now, would be cross designated as a special assistant state attorneys for Baltimore City. They could prosecute these cases under state law and be designated, cross designated as such, to bring charges so they can look at my investigation.
So let me make sure I understand. When you say you're going to go with a no charges.
Correct.
Then they could charge if you decided not to charge?
I would support them fully if they looked at my investigation and made a determination that there was sufficient evidence to go forward in the case.
Even if that's a determination that you had not made?
Which is counter to what I'm doing. Correct. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm proposing to do because, again, it's adding that second level and layer of transparency. And especially when it comes to these types of cases, that's what people are looking for.
So right now they can't do that because they're bound by federal jurisdiction.
Correct.
And you're saying that if they were given the opportunity or through this memorandum.
Cross designation, they could come under state law and prosecute these cases under state law.
Would it work the other way? I mean, would you be able to bring federal charges against somebody?
No, that's not what I'm proposing to do.
Yeah,
But I mean, the way that it works right now, we currently do that. So attorney generals, for example, are cross-designated. We essentially have to sign something to allow them to come over and to prosecute cases under state law and under my jurisdiction. We can do that with the federal government as well, understanding and recognizing that people have some sense of confidence in the Department of Justice.
All right. The next one is perhaps the most controversial of the proposals that you made, and that involves people's right, including police, to have a bench trial. Mm-hmm. So you're suggesting that the rules should be changed so that if an officer elects to have a bench trial, as so many of the officers did in the cases involving Freddie Gray's death, that prosecutors and judges also have a role in deciding whether that's appropriate. Right now, the police officer, him or herself, can simply say, I want a bench trial. Boom, it's granted. You're saying that the request can be made, but it has to be agreed upon by both the judge and the prosecutor?
So, yes, essentially. And let me just say, let me preface everything that I'm saying. This is not set in stone. This is the way people do things all across the country. Other states are doing them. And this is proposed in order to start a dialogue, right? So we have a unique opportunity to really reform the way that we do things. And so this is really being brought forward to create a dialogue and a conversation. I think that this has been most misunderstood, this proposal, which, you know, people keep saying, I'm looking to take away the defendant's constitutional right to a bench trial. Well, I just have to say, first and foremost, it's not taking away the defendant's constitutional right. When we look at the Sixth Amendment and when we look at the Maryland Constitution, there is a constitutional right to a jury trial, not to a bench trial. And so
yeah, it's interesting because I looked at that, too. It says it specifically states jury trial.
Correct.
It doesn't say trial even. It says jury trial.
It's a constitutional right to a jury trial. And so the question I think that we should be asking is, why are we taking away the community's role in the criminal justice system? Understanding that that's the constitutional right. When we look at other states, and there are 29 to 30 other states that do it this way, there's the federal system that does it this way. And essentially what I am proposing to do is, and I have to be clear, the court, if a defendant seeks to waive his constitutional right to a jury trial, the court and the prosecutor must also agree to that bench trial. That's all I'm proposing to do. I'm not looking to take away that right. I'm looking to conform Maryland standards with the way that we do it federally, and that the way that 29 to 30 other states already do it. What is the importance of a jury trial? Well, juries deliver a higher quality of justice and maintain that public trust and imparts credibility on the outcome of these cases. And I think that's what we're lacking. And I have to be clear as well. This is not just for police officers. This is for all defendants. I'm saying we should conform Maryland laws with the way that we're doing them federally.
Right. Lots I want to ask you about that, but I want to get to the fifth proposal before we go back and sort of talk about these other ones. And that involves two voting members of the public involved in administrative hearings that police are required to undergo.
Well, I think it's really, really important when we look at the review of these types of cases to have that civilian participation and that public accountability. And so when we look at House Bill 1016, which was passed in the General Assembly last year, it allows municipalities to pass legislation for public participation. So it's discretionary, but does not require it. And so essentially what I'm proposing to do is to give that piece of legislation some teeth. And, you know, we can go up to two individuals can be appointed to this board. But what I'm suggesting that we do is to have that maximum number of civilians participate with voting powers, because that bill does not say that those individuals even have voting power. And so that's essentially the ultimate goal, is to provide the community with a seat at the table.
All right. So we only have you for about 10 more minutes today because you're very busy, and I appreciate you making time for us. So let's go back and talk about a couple of the specifics
sure.
of this. Let's go back to this business of the bench trial.
Sure.
If the prosecutor and the judge disagree and with the defendant who has requested a bench trial and they say, no, you can't have one, can you give me in a scenario in which what would the reasons be for them to not agree to a bench trial?
So, I mean, there could be several sort of reasons that you would not agree to a bench trial. And I think that when, constitutionally, when we look at it, I think that you would want the community participation because you want the community to feel confident in the outcome of these cases. And so at the end of the day, this is how we do things already.
Do you don't think the community, for example, was confident in Judge Williams' capacity as a jurist?
So I'm not utilizing that example. And I have to say, I respect Judge Williams' opinion. That's the way that the process works. That's the way that the law works. And I have to point out that, you know, a lot of times people think that it's a constitutional right, but it's actually a Maryland court rule, Rule 426, which allows for a defendant to waive their jury trial right. I respect the judge's opinion. That's his job. My job was to bring the process and to guarantee the process. His job was to make a determination about guilt or innocence. What I'm saying is that if we really want to reform and we really want to increase and break down the barriers of distrust among law enforcement and in our communities, this is a way in which we can do it.
Do you, is there evidence, as far as you know, that the quality of justice, you use the phrase that the quality of justice is better in a jury trial than on a bench trial? And how do you make that
judgment? Again, there's a reason why there's a constitutional right to a jury trial. Again, what happens is you have a vast sort of majority of in a diverse select population cross-designation of individuals who are part of that jury. That's how I actually met you, right?
That's right. I served on a jury that you were prosecuting a case.
Exactly. And it just assures confidence in the criminal justice system, I would say. And so when I think about that, it controls bias in the courtroom. There have been numerous studies which suggest that people have these inherent biases. Juries have them and judges have them. Now, when you have 12 jurors with inherent bias, it's kind of a checks and balances, right? You have different opinions, and there's a way in which you can kind of vet that out. When you have one judge, it's just one person.
Do you think in your heart of hearts that had there been juries for those officers who elected bench trials, you would have gotten some convictions?
So what I can say, and I'm not sure, again, you never know with a jury. I've done this for a number of years. You think your strongest cases, you put in front of a jury, you're like, this is a sure conviction, and they come back and not guilty. I can say that we did come close to obtaining a conviction in one of the officers' cases when it was in front of a jury trial. And it became very clear, you know, throughout the course of those trials that the judge, and he was totally within his right not to believe the state's theory of the case and to rule the way that he did. But when he acquitted one of the arresting officers, the highest ranking police officer, and the van driver, it became apparent that, you know, there was no sense in us continuing. We weren't going to proceed on a sergeant who was lesser than the lieutenant. We weren't going to proceed on the other arresting officer. It became very clear from where he stood.
Looking ahead, you, among others, have noted that you yourself represent 1% of the women of color who serve in positions like yours around the country. 95% of elected prosecutors are white. 79% of them are men. Mm-hmm. Is this a slippery slope? If they were then granted the power, the wherewithal to deny bench trials to people, could it be that certain defendants of color, who might benefit from a bench trial, benefit from being involved in a complicated case that only a judge could figure out. Are there some unintended consequences for this?
So what I can say is that, yeah, I do represent 1% of all elected prosecutors in this country, women of color, but I don't think that race plays into it. I really don't. I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, I have a job to do, and that is to apply justice fairly and equally to everybody, regardless of your race, your sex, your socioeconomic status, and of course, your occupation. And so I would assume anybody in this role, regardless of who they are, would be able to have that same sort of understanding of their responsibility. And so I don't think that, you know, the bench trial or the election of a bench trial would change their responsibility to apply justice fairly and equally.
Are these recommendations going to be part of the discussion around the consent decree that the Department of Justice is now working out with the city as a result of the report that the Department of Justice issued about the police department last summer?
I would hope so. I mean, that's why I'm proposing it. What we ultimately found as a result of those cases was we applied accountability, right? Accountability led to exposure. That was the Department of Justice report. That exposure led to reform. And we all understand and recognize that reform is needed. The question now is, how do we implement? And so this was just, again, this is nothing is set in stone. This was an opportunity for us to have a dialogue. How do we reform, you know, some of the innate sort of issues that were presented in this case, and not just this case, but cases all across the country? How do we increase transparency? How do we increase accountability? And we have a unique opportunity in Baltimore right now to really get it right.
What do you think you learned ultimately from the prosecution of the officers involved in the death of Freddie Gray?
One thing, I've learned a lot.
I bet. I think we all have.
I've learned a lot. Justice, and I would say justice is always worth the fight. Justice is always worth the price paid for its pursuit. That's what I would say. So, I went into this, and I'll be clear. I went into this, Tom, you know, to reform the criminal justice system. And, you know, those individual officers were not held accountable the way in which I would have liked them to be held accountable. However, every single police officer in the city of Baltimore is being held accountable for the actions of a few. We have to reform the way that things were happening for one of the largest police departments in this country, the discriminatory policing practices. And that's more than I could have ever hoped for.
You are of police, your family, you have
Absolutely.
A long history of police in your family. So many of these proposals are opposed by the police, and they point to the fact that they have in their contracts somewhat special provisions that treat police officers differently in criminal cases than I would be treated or you would be treated. What do you say to them about these special what's your opinion about whether or not these special provisions that apply only to police officers, things like the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, should those provisions be in place? Should police officers be treated under the law somewhat differently than everybody else?
I mean, coming from a background of police officers, again, my family are five generations. My great-great-uncle, my great uncle and my grandfather, who was one of the founding members of the Black Police Organization in Massachusetts. Law enforcement is ingrained. But I would have to say that what they instilled in me is that justice is blind. And it has to be applied fairly and equally to everybody in order for this system to work. And if it isn't, then we see the result of that. We see the barriers that are placed between our communities and law enforcement. And that's what we have to be able to break down at the end of the day.
Let me ask you one more question, because I know you have to run. In the preamble to these proposals, you say that the strained relationship between the community and police feels somehow different than tensions of the past, that it's somehow a different level. There seems to be a strained relationship between you and Mayor Rawlings Blake, who's leaving office in a month. How's your relationship with Commissioner Davis? How do you expect your relationship to be with the new mayor, who's widely assumed to be Catherine Pugh?
Right.
And is this different level of tension going to require a different approach to alleviating?
And so what I can say is that, you know, the preamble to the white paper is essentially saying that that tension is not just something that we're experiencing in Baltimore City, but all across the country, the tension between communities and law enforcement. When it comes to my relationship with the police department and with Commissioner Davis and with the mayor, it's not strained. Despite what, you know, oftentimes is portrayed, it's not strained. We have one common goal, which is the betterment of our city. And so I have a great working relationship with the commissioner. I have a great working relationship, you know, even with the mayor. You know, it's all water under the bridge. Her common goal is the betterment for this city for the next month, and so is mine. And so what I can tell you is that I will work with anyone. And I'm looking forward to the next mayor coming in the next administration because I have a vested interest. I live in the heart of West Baltimore. You know, I don't have to turn on the news. I don't have to open up the newspaper to see the crime plaguing my community. All I have to do is open up the door. I'm raising two little girls in the heart of West Baltimore. And so I have a vested interest the same way that the mayor does, the same way that Police Commissioner Kevin Davis does, and the same way that numerous, you know, police officers on the Baltimore Police Department who are risking their lives and time away from their family are. They have a vested interest, and that interest is the betterment of this city.
Marilyn Mosby is the Baltimore City State's Attorney. We'll have a link to the proposals that she has offered to reform the way police officers are investigated and prosecuted on our website. Come to WIPR.org/midday. Madam State's Attorney, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I look forward to the next time. Coming up, more on police misconduct reforms with our legal eagles, Dave Jarros of the University of Baltimore and Ed Smith, an attorney in private practice. You are welcome to join our conversation. You can give us a call at 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, or send us a tweet at Midday Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stick around.
Tune to Midday here on your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the program, an update on what's being done to eliminate the problems that some voters found at the polls in the April 26th primary last spring. Several polling places had their hours extended when they didn't open on time, and the results of the election were first certified, then they were decertified, then they were certified again. So what happened? I'll talk to folks from the City and State Board of Elections, as well as a former Secretary of State who has also trained election judges. We'll talk about, among other things, the plans that are already in place to audit the results of the election in Maryland. That's coming up midday Thursday, along with theater critic J. Wynn Russick's weekly theater review. She's going to tell us all about Cinderella at the Hippodrome Theater. If you're just joining us today, in the first part of our show, we heard from Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby about her proposals to reform the way police misconduct is investigated and prosecuted. Ed Smith and David Jarros now join me in Studio A. They were with us throughout all of the trials and the officers indicted in the death of Freddie Gray with their trenchant legal analysis, and we are calling on them again today for some perspective on the proposals that the state's attorney has offered. Ed Smith is a lawyer in private practice who served in the state's attorney's office at the outset of his career. Dave Jarros is an associate professor at the University of Baltimore School of Law, whose scholarly focus is on criminal law. He was in the courtroom for the verdicts in all three of the bench trials in the Freddie Gray cases and when Judge Williams declared a mistrial in the trial of William Porter last December. We'd love to hear what you have to say about Marilyn Mosby's reform proposals as well. You can give us a call, 410-662-8780. You can drop us a tweet. Our handle is at Midday Tom Hall, or you can send us an email, midday@wipr.org. Well, Dave and Ed, good to see you guys both. Thank you for coming in.
It's wonderful to see you again, man.
All right, so we've got the band together again here talking about, police misconduct. So, Eddie, let me just start with you, just your general reaction to these proposals and to State's Attorney Mosby's defense of them.
Well, let me start by saying that she is an elected official. She has a responsibility to float proposals to make the administration of justice better for us all. She was duly elected by citizens of this city, and she has opinions, and obviously strong ones from what I heard, about how to make this situation in the criminal justice system better for all of us. Now, I can't say that personally I agree with some of them, because, of course, I've represented some of these officers along the way in trial boards. And, of course, I've been the beneficiary of both jury trials and court trials.
And trial boards are internal hearings in the police department as well as trials. So what give me an example of one of the things you disagree with.
Well, first of all, I don't like the fact that the federal folks need to oversee state issues. They have enough to do, and we should allow them to stay in their lane. We appreciate their help when they want to give it to us, but we do not need federal oversight on everything. And I know I sound like a state's rights guy here, but that's not the case. We're further down the road now. We're responsible for our communities, and I think that we can do this without their help, other than in certain instances where they have decided, such as civil rights, to come in and to overlook based on a federal statute.
All right, so the cross-designation proposal rubs you the wrong way, perhaps. Dave Jarosz, anything pop out at you when you heard the state's attorney?
So I range from if not wildly ecstatic, really excited about some of these ideas, to staunchly opposed. And so you sort of have to take each one and break it apart, and they all have some complications that we'd have to look into and think about. I think the first place where I start in terms of the opposition is I'm troubled by the bench trial proposal, and we can talk about that in depth. I come at it a little differently from Eddie in terms of the question of her third idea of cross-designating federal prosecutors to come in and help. But I'm curious about that one. It's interesting how Ms. Mosby explained it. She it sounds to me like she's very certain that she wants to preserve the local authority to prosecute, but then have the federal prosecutors allowed to sort of overrule a desire not to prosecute and pursue a case, which I think allays one concern, which is the concern about a system that's not taking these cases seriously. But it doesn't allay another concern, which is about local political pressure to prosecute these cases. And I think if you look at what happened in the trial of Freddie Gray, there was opposition on both sides, some who thought this was a politically motivated prosecution and others that thought this was a police department that was unwilling to prosecute or investigate one of their own. And to a significant extent, I think the need for some outside independent figure is needed to prosecute and investigate these cases. That is neither.
Dave Jarosz is from the University of Baltimore School of Law. Ed Smith is an attorney in private practice. They join me. We're talking about Marilyn Mosby's reform proposals for how police are investigated and prosecuted after allegations of misconduct. You can join our conversation 410-662-8780. Drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, or our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So let's talk about this bench trial thing, Dave, as you suggest. Senator Bobby Zirkin has said that the state doesn't have a right to a jury trial. Individuals have a right to a jury trial. Just because you lose a case doesn't mean you change the entire framework of defendants' rights. But on the other hand, Ed Smith, the state's attorney, notes that this is the federal law, and it is in place in several other states as well.
Yeah. Well, I believe his word was moronic, which I take a strong umbrage to. I don't think it's moronic to start a dialogue, as State's Attorney Mosby wants to do. I don't like it, frankly, because in Maryland we have decided that we are going to allow, by court rule, a defendant to have a choice, court or a jury trial. And to my way of thinking, that's correct. Why change the whole system? And this is where I agree with Zirkin, because there happens to be a case in which there was an unsuccessful prosecution.
Do you
it's
accept,
like throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
Do you accept Ms. Mosby's sort of assumption, I'm not sure it's a contention, but her gut reaction, perhaps, that a jury trial in these officers, in the cases in which the officer is elected for a bench trial in the Freddie Gray case, would have had a different outcome?
Not necessarily. I usually prefer to have a jury, to be honest with you, in the box, but where there is a complicated issue that has to be parsed out, I would prefer to have a judge. But see, the whole thing is that the state is this great apparatus with a lot of resources that they bring to bear, the police, the resources of the state's attorney's office, and you got this one little guy or girl who've been charged with a crime. Well, Maryland says, okay, look, we're going to give them an opportunity to make a choice. Now, I can't say, and, you know, I've been the recipient and the bugaboo of the federal system where prosecutors have to agree in order to withdraw a jury trial. And really, it's quite deflating, to be honest with you. But that's the way they do it. The 29 states or 50 states or whoever else does it, that's their problem. I live in the state of Maryland, and it's a great place to live, and it's a great place to have choices, and that's what we have.
I mean, Dave Jarris, these were pretty complicated cases, were they not, legally? And maybe it's a good idea to have a jurist who's, you know, with the kind of expertise that Judge Williams had.
I think there's a significant irony here, because in many ways, the trial of the officers in the Freddie Gray cases is the reason why it is important, even if it's not constitutionally required, to have the option to have a bench trial. Remember that the initial big question in this case was whether or not venue should be in Baltimore City at all. And I think there was significant reasons why a defendant would have been concerned after the unrest that the city experienced about whether or not a jury could fairly view what the evidence in the case and make a fair decision. And so
It is interesting that the only officer who did have a jury trial came very close to getting convicted. One vote.
And I would stress that the fact that it came close to a conviction is not necessarily evidence that it was a fact that they could have gotten to the right answer. I think it is, as Eddie pointed out, really important to recognize that in these cases, the state pursued a very complex legal theory. At one point, the first officer who elected the jury trial was charged on a theory of assault that involved the police officer lawfully stopping Mr. Gray with reasonable suspicion, but then not being diligent enough in eliminating that suspicion, and so the touching as a result of that arrest was considered an assault. All of those things, I think, were issues that a defendant would fear a jury would fail to understand exactly the legal question. And I think that's why it's an important protection.
All right, we got a bunch of folks lined up on the phone. We're going to get to them after we take a quick break. But before we take that quick break, let me ask you guys to explain, is it always the case that, or why was it the case in this particular instance, in the six officers, that the same judge was assigned to all six? Was that done for efficiency? Was that done because the assumption is then that this particular judge would be, you know, fully erudite about the details of the cases? Could there have been six different judges?
There's a lot of practical reasons to have one judge assigned to all of the cases. We have 34 circuit court judges now on the bench. Having one judge who knows the facts cuts down and slims down the fair administration of justice. The administrative judge makes that decision. In this case, Judge Pearson would consult with the judge who is going to be assigned the case to see if he or she would be amenable to having all of the cases. They can split them because they have discretion. And we have to have the faith in our judges, and most of us do who try cases, to understand who is who and what they might do and whether or not they will be fair under certain circumstances and maybe colored under others. So when you go into a trial as an attorney, you have to put all of that in your head.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We will have much more on ways to handle police misconduct allegations when we come back. You can join our discussion with our legal eagles, Ed Smith and Dave Jarris. Our telephone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. We're going to get to your calls as soon as we come back after this quick break.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Attorney Ed Smith and University of Baltimore School of Law Professor Dave Jarris are with us as well. You can join the conversation. Our telephone number, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Before we go to the phones, Dave Jarris, there are some things in here in State's Attorney General Mosby's proposals that you agree with.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that Ed is right, absolutely, that Ms. Mosby has started a conversation about some issues that are incredibly important. And one of the issues she's focused on is how to get members of the community, civilians involved in this process, giving it more legitimacy and giving, of course, those communities a voice. One of the real important things is her effort, her proposal to bring in civilians to be on hearing boards. And I think what is particularly important about this is it highlights how much union contracts ultimately are shaping things behind the scenes. Because much of her proposal would really require that city leaders focus on these issues when they negotiate contracts with the police unions. And that will be something that will have to be wrestled with in the days ahead.
Yeah, obviously, that's something very much on the minds of the Fraternal Order of Police, who are basically making the case. Kind of, it's interesting, a parallel between the bench trial versus the jury trial. Professional police, law enforcement people are saying you can't have people outside of law enforcement making judgments about people who are inside law enforcement.
And I would say that's a false parallel. I think the concerns about whether or not a defendant should be able to have a bench trial if they're worried about whether or not a jury can fairly decide their case is very different from the question about whether or not civilians can provide an important voice on review boards.
Antonio in Baltimore, thanks for calling Midday. You're on the line with Dave Jarrus and Ed Smith. Welcome to the show. Antonio, are you there? All right, we're going to move to Chris in Baltimore. Chris, thanks for calling Midday. Glad you're with us. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My questions begin with there's a lack of consistency on the part of the Office of the State's Attorney. And what I mean by that is we see six officers charged in the matter of Freddie Gray, but in the incident with Colin Truss at North and Greenmount, we didn't see all of the involved officers charged. There was one officer charged. So I'm worried about consistency. And then when you move forward, wherever it's written, it is a right that people can choose either a bench trial or a judge trial. And again, regardless of where that's written, that's what it is now. So when we discuss taking away people's rights, I have a problem with that because some cases, even as the police said, which I'm not a police officer, I'm not affiliated with the police, but as they said, there are some cases where the outcome can depend more on the knowledge of the law or the understanding of processes and policy. And that shouldn't be left up to just the emotional sway of a jury.
Of course, Ed Smith, the reason for bench trials originally was, to a certain extent, as a matter of efficiency, right? It was just easier to have a bench trial because you didn't have to choose 12 jurors.
Well, in jolly old England, where a lot of this stuff springs from the common law, the king appointed the bench. And so if you were a person who sat, for instance, on a star chamber or on a common law chamber of the king's bench, then it was only a bench trial. I mean, it stems way back. And the question then became, well, listen, we're not getting citizens who have a big stake in what's going on here, the right to decide on what an outcome is in a criminal or a civil case. So it expanded. And I think the caller really kind of hit it on the head. We have, and I said it before, we have a choice here in Maryland. We have made a policy decision. And that decision is that we want court trials and we want jury trials and we have the right to have them.
Dave?
Now, I would say, and I'm not in favor of the proposal, but in Ms. Bosby's defense, across the country, we have seen that officers have routinely chosen to go with a bench trial, and there is reason to believe that judges are generally more inclined to believe an officer's story. They work with them every day. They hear them testify in case after case, and they tend to be seen as part of the same system. She talks in her report about the implicit bias of having judges who look like the officers deciding their fate, as opposed to members of the community. And those are, I think, important concerns that we have to be aware of. And whether or not that means we adopt Ms. Mosby's bench trial or find other ways that community members are involved and have a voice in this process, it is, I think, worth recognizing that it does cast a pall over the legitimacy of the process and the legitimacy of an acquittal.
Well, the problem is here, Dave, and I have to, the problem is the individuals who are making the decisions, because I can't disagree more that in Baltimore City, people who look like the defendants who sit every day on that bench and dispense justice. I mean, I know them. I've known them for years. So the deal is not that. it's not race. What the deal really is having people who have morality, who have a sense of justice and fairness. And I think that's what we need to work on, not this artificial stuff.
And, of course, the relationship between the entire community, communities of color, communities, Caucasian communities, and the police has a very strong influence on how these juries are going to see right. the evidence presented to them. I think many people have had the experience of being on juries in which there are certain jurors who are just somewhat ossified in their contention that the police never tell the truth. And therefore, any evidence that is adduced by the police is just simply not taken seriously. And that, and this, you know, this is all of a piece. I mean,
right.
it's difficult.
And the word never has to be really looked at because there are police officers out there who do tell the truth, who are straight up men and women, and who are moral. And so the deal is when you run across somebody who doesn't, then you deal with them. And if you don't, then you have to presume that it is a good system and you're going to be treated fairly.
One of the things that strikes me is that in the case of the officers indicted in the death of Freddie Gray, you have William Porter, who's tried first. He has a jury trial. It's a hung jury. But on one of the counts, we learn after the trial from one of the jurors, that the vote of the jury was 11-1 to convict. So they were one vote short of a conviction. Dave Joseph, this is an unfair question because it's speculative, but it's interesting that his trial, his retrial, was scheduled for after many of the other trials. Had he been retried right away, and we did not have the benefit, or if you're a prosecutor, the problem of all of this other evidence in the other trials having been introduced to this judge, do you think there could have been a different outcome?
You're asking if Porter had then been tried in front of Judge Williams?
No. If he had had another jury trial right away. In other words, he was the second trial.
Well, as
instead
Ms.
of being the sixth trial.
So, well, assuming that it was another jury trial, as Ms. Mosby pointed out, I think it is. She was absolutely right when she said, "You never know with a jury, right?" And in fact, that statement is some reason why I think it is important for a defendant to have the right to say, I would like a bench trial, right? Because there is an element of randomness that you can never be sure that the jury is understanding and applying the law correctly.
And that element of randomness is greatly attenuated at the bench with just a judge?
I think with just a judge, you have the same problem with how the judge might ultimately interpret the facts, but I think you can be far more confident they understand exactly what the law requires.
Let me ask about another one of her proposals, and that is to expand the powers of state's attorneys' investigators. So does this mean that people in the state's attorney's office, whether they're investigators or lawyers, could be issued weapons? And she's talking about being allowed the power to arrest people. She, in statements following her decision to not try the remaining officers, she pointed to the fact that search warrants were issued, but the police investigators who were supposedly working for the state's attorney's office didn't execute search warrants. So, for example, they did not have access to cell phone records of some of the police involved in the apprehension of Mr. Gray. Should we be giving people from the state's attorney's office guns and arrest powers?
Well, if the legislature wants that, they certainly have a right to do it. I would hesitate. And
Ms. Mosby did not mention anything about guns, but the police have, in their opposition to this suggestion,
if they're going to serve some warrants, they better have some guns because there's some rough characters out there, and they're not going to just give them cool pops when they come up. There's going to be a problem. So I think that if that is what the legislature wants to do, to invest the state's attorney with that kind of power, then it seems to me we're on a very slippery slope, and they are too, because there's an absolute privilege and then there's a qualified privilege that we have to keep in mind as it relates to the state's attorney's office and their employees. And if that's dumbed down, then if they become an agent of bad change, then there's going to be a problem.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important point. The other thing, though, is there are a lot of questions that we don't know about what happened during this investigation of Freddie Gray that I think is really worth investigation and we should know. This idea, and you referred to there was a press conference, and the state's attorney said that there were warrants for the cell phones of the officers that were signed by a judge that were never served, so that if there had been communications between the officers that that were not on the radio, we could have learned about that may have been, there may be nothing there, there may have been something. The fact that officers, if they did not serve those warrants, that gives credence to the idea that police officers should not be investigating their own. So I'm not sure that this solution of having the state's attorney's office become investigators is the way to solve that problem. But it speaks to the issue of whether the police should be investigating their own.
All right. We are going to have to leave it there. Thank you, gentlemen. Always a pleasure. Good to see
you. Thank you. It's
David Jarris is on the faculty of the University of Baltimore School of Law. Edward Smith is an attorney in private practice. They are kind enough to offer legal analysis for us here on Midday. Lunch for our guests today was provided by Dangerously Delicious Pies. That's making them smile. They've got locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the square in Canton and 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Their menu includes a large variety of homemade sweet and savory pies and quiches. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, conversation about the mechanics of voting. Early voting ends tomorrow. Marylanders have already set a record for early voting this year. The voting system was new to many people last April when it was first introduced. It was also new to the election officials who were hired to work the polling locations, and it caused more than a few hiccups with the process. We'll see if they've worked those out by now. We'll also check in with theater critic J. Wynn Russick. She's got her weekly theater review. Until then, I'm Tom Hall. On behalf of all of us on the Midday team, thanks for joining us. Here and Now is up next after the news at the top of the hour. And finally, full disclosure, I want the Cubs to win. Have a great day.